Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It is Monday, 8th of March, 2021. Quite a lot of two-way action, to say the least, since Friday, where we closed on a strong note in the U.S. I think part of that, the sensitivity to what's going on in the Treasury market and the fact that those yields eased off of new cycle highs and consolidated back a bit lower, some strength coming into the Treasury market, got equities all fired up, perhaps as well as strong non-farm payroll support, whatever the reason, we both closed strong Friday and then immediately just started melting lower in Asia. Terrible session in China. I'll get to you in a second, Peter, on that. I just wanted to point out a couple of things. On slide two, just looking through the NASDAQ 100, which has been the really high beta index to all this goings on in the Treasury market and of course, the index with its tech heavy and interest rate sensitivity has moved the most. We saw on a weekly candlestick basis what looked like an encouraging close. You can see that dotted line is the prior major high from way back in last September. It was crossed below late last week, and then we closed well above. Nice, sort of candlestick, classic hammer reversal. And then on the right, I'm just showing that it actually found resistance right there at that key 12,750 area. So that really needs to be taken out before we start getting too encouraged here. And then you see some of the selling coming in overnight. And the other thing I wanted to point out before I turn it over to you, Peter, and especially want to pick your brain on what's going on in China. I think we're both struggling a little bit with why it's selling off so badly there. But just to note why we've talked so much about this interest rate sensitivity, and we've seen on slide three, as volatility has picked up in the Treasury market, you can see that in the black line there, the Treasury, the 10-year Treasury future, and the positive correlation increasingly with the NASDAQ 100. So, a little chance, I believe, certainly of a strong, sustainable bid coming into the market until we get stability in interest rates. But over to you, Peter, on equities and what your feeling is here, and perhaps a little Chinese flavor as well, if any. It's a remarkable move. It deserves to be tracked.
Yeah, and the risk-free rate in China is pretty much unchanged, so it has nothing to do with interest rate sensitivity. I think the and the moves in China obviously is in stark contrast to the comments from the Chinese banking regulator that he only sees equity bubbles outside China. But clearly, as we've pointed out, valuations have been pretty rich in China. And you have a company like we have talked about this company before, Kuaichow Moutai, which is the world's largest, at least on market value, brewage company in the world. They make this famous local liquor. And obviously, as wealth increases in China, you sort of have these semi middle class luxury goods being in higher demand, and that has benefited a company like Kuaichow Moutai. But if you look at the price performance over the past 3 or 4 months, it's pretty clear that that was a very speculative, momentum driven, with no basis and fundamentals driving this stock higher. And it's a pretty big one for the indices over there, and it is just down, I think, 25% now in a matter of a few weeks. So, and it was very down heavily again this in today's session, so almost 5%. So that's I think there's a lot of technical reasons, and there has been a lot of froth in the Chinese market. So it sort of lives its own life at this point in time. I want to point out on slide four more generally what's happening with the NASDAQ, and we have NASDAQ 100, so the benchmark for technology stocks. Almost it's down 1.7% this morning. So as you said, John, it reversed pretty heavily from the rebound yesterday. Oh, it just slipped 0.2% there in a few seconds. So you can sort of sense here from my talking that we have very nervous markets. The US 10-year yield is up a couple of basis points again today off US exchange hours. So the pressure is still on. I think that 1.6% on the 10-year in the US is the key point. But as sorry, coming back to the slide on slide four, I tried on Friday. You can see the link to my research note. You can see it's very difficult to measure the interest rate sensitivity because of the very noisy data. And if you go back very far, as I tried to explain in my note, you see a positive correlation between rising interest rates and equities, but it's not really, you cannot really do those long-term series. I mean, the it just it gets lost in the noise in the statistical analysis. So right now, I put it in an XY chart of S&P 500 and bubble stocks at 10-day rolling mean return as a function of where the US 10-year yield is in absolute terms. And here you see pretty clearly that when as we moved above 1.2%, the bubble stocks suddenly began to slip and go from 0% average returns to recently -2% on average over 10 trading sessions. That's a pretty remarkable. And you see the S&P 500 has a much less interest rate sensitivity. And I go through the equity valuation theory and the logic behind why S&P 500 is not as sensitive. I don't think this is for it's too technical for a podcast, but go read the article if you're interested in it. I'll put in the equity themes overview just to give you a brief update. As you can see, all the speculative things, highly priced, is really down heavily here in March already, with the green transformation down another 10% and down 12% for the year. And before we go to the next one, John, I just want to, because I think it's so important. So on slide five, I mean, we are having this conversation about inflation. We'll have the China PPI coming on Wednesday. It is the ultimate question is how far will inflation go? Will it stick, and at what level? With the $1.9 trillion dollars in stimulus bill being passed by the U.S. Congress, I think we'll get even more demand. And I think our story about inflation pressures right now being supply driven and then demand driven later in the second half, as all the excess savings are being released into the economy, will play its part in that narrative. And as you can see on slide five, you have the Gategal, which is a research house, I think, out of Hong Kong, have shown this chart where they show that the equities actually deliver most of their returns actually in what they call disinflationary periods versus inflationary periods. Where they put the threshold, I don't know yet, but we did a big piece on inflation and equities 1.5 years ago, and you can see that chart here on the right-hand side of the slide, slide five here. You can see that as you move above 3.2%, which is the exact mean inflation rate in the US over a 120-year period. So 3.2%, that's your average. So when you're above that inflation level, that's when you are in the upper half. And as you can see here, that really goes hand in hand with significantly lower both nominal and real rate returns for equities. So yeah, we have to stay on our toes for the inflation.
On that point, of course, it does not include dividends, which were massive, especially back in the 70s and early 80s. But
good point.
I remember adjusting the index level for the S&P to inflation, and 1982 actually posted something like a 28-year low. Yeah. The S&P 500. It is inflation adjusted possible to have those kinds of returns. The history has shown. We're not trying to get doom and gloom here. We're just making the point that inflation is very important. It's why the market is getting so exercised by this whole issue. And speaking of inflation and the Chinese PPI, a ton of correlation there to the oil price. And you know, on top of an already very steep rally, we'll be getting news overnight that's pushing prices further. Some pretty big levels coming into view here on Brent.
Absolutely, John. We have we rallied above $70 overnight in after the news that the Saudi oil facility, basically one of the biggest oil terminals in the world, had been under attack. No damage has been done, but it just highlights the fragility of oil installation in that area, while the standoff between Saudi Arabia and Yemen in the south. So it's pushing above our $70, and it's coming on top of this decision last week to roll over production, current production levels, for another month. OPEC Plus on Thursday came with that decision, obviously spurred on by Saudi Arabia, and it clearly highlights the risk of this market overheating now, because we are having a supply withheld rally, not a demand driven rally, and that obviously is raising some concerns about consumers' willingness to pay these prices. So we'll see where it ends. But as you can see on the chart here on slide eight, 72 and a quarter is we've seen that peak out on several occasions there. So that's the next level to look out for. And I think the big thing really to look out for is the U.S. shale oil industry. You probably know more about the U.S. than I do, John. Well, you do. But Saudi Arabia and Russia believe that U.S. shale oil growth is dead. That's the reason why they think they can just continue to push the price up, because it's not going to have a production response from U.S. producers. I think that potential could start to change, because with WTI approaching $70, it is just such a potential windfall for producers, considering where the costs are for many of these producers. So I would say down towards the $50 area.
And my impression is that they've done a lot of well completions, that they're sort of ready to turn on. It's an odd oil source, shale, in many areas, because you can almost turn it on on and off like a tap, unlike some of these major fields, which require a lot of investment to and time to get flowing.
Exactly. They can come back. They can increase production within a matter of months, where it normally would be a matter of years. So it definitely one very, very interesting one to follow over the coming weeks and months.
Now, what about across the board commodities? So we've talked so much about positioning and how extended it is. What's your impression in the latest round of figures from this the positioning reports out of the U.S.?
Well, I think we're in the odd situation right now that there's no doubt that we have a strong fundamental story for the commodity space, and that's been growing now for the past 6 months. We've done webinars, we've done various reports why we see the strong upside for commodities. But obviously, nothing ever goes in a straight line, and it seems like we hit a buffer for now, and that buffer is really being increased by the recent rise in yields and also the rise in the dollar. So we saw last week here, you can see that on slide 10, that's the cut report commitment of traders from last week. We can see that we have we had broad reductions across all commodities with a few exceptions, and that's not because the fundamental outlook suddenly had changed. It's really because we're seeing some deleveraging risks coming into the market. Just take a look at something like copper. Overnight, we opened up 2%. We're now trading down 1% on the day. Obviously, part of that is the sell-off in Chinese stocks, but China is key driver for metals like copper. And if they can't keep it hold it up overnight in their own market, then it could indicate that we need to see a potentially deeper correction, especially in industrial metals.
Right. And then if we push it back or pull it back over to FX and the themes that we're seeing running through FX, I think you see clearly the entire interest rate story feeding that weak yen, weak Swiss franc story. We talked about that last week. You can see the performance of the trends on slide 6 in FX, G10 FX on the lower right there. And the momentum shifts are the top couple of lines there. And from there, you can see the momentum shift is most strong in the oil-linked currency, so Nokkie and CAD. And then the dollar, of course, is rising on the strength of U.S. yields. So those are the developments. And I'm just really curious to see if these, on the commodity side, if we risk some consolidation there, partly on the stronger dollar, but partly on positioning as well, if we get this risk sentiment to pressure continuing for a while. So I'm really curious to see that. You can see, of course, on the top left there, Eurodollar breaking down below that 119.50 area. It's really, fully entering back into that old territory and could extend that sell-off towards 116 until either U.S. yields halt their rise or we get some signal from the Fed, etc. And then on slide 7, I have the Aussie dollar, and you can see the very technical level it found support, the 38.2% retracement of the entire rally from November lows. Curious to see, again, if we get some more consolidation in commodities, we can see a full test of that trend down towards 74. And there's another retracement Fibonacci-wise down there as well, just below 74. And then on gold, Ola, we have the interest rate sensitivity, but it also found a very technical support level that you noted in our internal call earlier as well. Well, what is that level? And you've got a couple of charts here as well on slide 9.
Absolutely, John. We've been showing this slide here today on slide 9 that with gold, as we broke the 1762 level, the next major level was 1688. It's basically using Mr. Fibonacci, and that was exactly the low that we found on Friday before bouncing back to 1700. But you can also see on this now, in order really to get back into some kind of safety, we need to move back above 1762 at least, and that's still quite a order from where we are currently trading around the 1700 level. Another one is obviously investment demand is fading and has been fading quite fast in recent weeks. I just put in the insert, which is just highlighting the speculative position in held in futures markets by hedge funds. That's the red line. And the blue line, which is the total ETF holdings. And you can see we got some, especially the futures position is now down to the lowest since the early parts of 2019. It's down 80% from the record high we had in October 18. So funds have really been, basically there's no momentum right now. And as long as we don't have any positive momentum coming back into this market, they're not the ones going to buy the bottom. They're going to buy into strength once that strength returns. And we haven't really seen strength in this gold market since August last year.
Yeah, and speaking of which, we've seen a few corrections, obviously, over the many years in gold versus the various currencies. And I was looking at gold versus the Aussie, and we're getting towards the the largest correction that cross has ever seen, ever being back to the year 2000. So, very interesting to see the broad weakness in gold versus fiat when we're talking about a reflationary backdrop.
And John, if I just may mention, you mentioned corrections there. I sent out a chart last week on Twitter. It's one I've created a number of years ago. Very simple, just showing the distance between gold and the 200-day moving average. And we basically found since 2014 on several occasions that every time that gold price moved 10% or more below the price of the spot price or the 200-day moving average, the market basically witnessed a sharp rebound. So obviously, we are currently just around 10% below the 200-day moving average, so it caught the imagination, but obviously no scientifics behind it, but just an interesting one to follow.
To me, if it's going to bounce, it'd be because somewhere we see some treasury, or sorry, some support coming into the treasury market at this point. That would certainly
absolutely
do gold's some big favors. All right, let's get to the calendars. What's going on this week? And Peter, I see from your slide 11, there's plenty of company earning activity reports coming this week.
Yeah, exactly, John. We have around 30 companies or so that are reporting, and I think I've highlighted in red the most important ones to follow. And today, XPeng, which is a new kid on the block in terms of electrical vehicles, as we talked about internally on Friday. I mean, it's the competition is really heating up in electrical vehicles. It seems to be easier than ever to start actually a car company, or at least get the funding for it. It's also technically it's easier. On Tuesday, Deutsche Post in the logistics space, I think it's interesting from the inflation angle. Wednesday, it's European Retailing Day with Adidas and Inditex. Sits pretty much in the center of the carnage of those European restrictions. Any outlook from those two companies? I guess they are pretty. They have conversation all the time with the authorities about when we are reopening, so they can, so they can plan their future. So whatever they guide in terms of the outlook, it's worth having a note on. And then Thursday is a big Chinese e-commerce day with JD.com and Pin. How did you pronounce it, John? Pin down, dwa,
Pin dwa.
dwa. You are so good at languages. I want to say Pin duo, but you say.
I pretend well anyway.
Fine, but that's a big day for Chinese e-commerce stocks. At least these two are pretty heavyweights, both in the emerging market indices, the broad indices, but specifically in that space overall. So we'll have to watch that. DocuSign is part of the bubble stocks baskets that we are tracking, and which is right now experiencing a 24% drawdown. So I think DocuSign will be an excellent test of sentiment later this week on interest rate, inflation, how it feeds into valuation, and how strong people feel about bubble stocks and buying the dip. So I'll be watching that one with a lot of anticipation. So
yeah, and one brief note on the XPeng. I know nothing, absolutely nothing about that company, but I just can't forget the whole hubbub there was about the inventor Dyson, the guy famous for the vacuum cleaners and other bits of fancy retail gadgets, looking into building a electrical car and then deciding not to because it was too easy. They were too easy to make,
Yeah.
which suggests that all of the IP is in the batteries and those systems and subsystems, and maybe the whole experience rather than the car itself. Very interesting to watch how this shakes out. Anyway, on to it is a really key week. I think it really is a key week for markets to either pull themselves together or to continue accelerating lower. That's for the treasury market as well as the equity market. And on that front, we have radio silence from the Fed. So we should not be expecting anything at all from the Fed. But we do have a couple of treasury auctions that are absolutely critical because let's not forget it was a 7-year auction and some of the disorder and signs of market dysfunction around that was caused the initial spike higher in yields. We have a 10-year on Wednesday and a 30-year on Thursday. So those will be really critical, I think, as the last sort of check-in on the treasury market ahead of the following week. So next week's March 17th FOMC meeting. The calendar fairly clear for today. We'll look for that February PPI, of course, out of China, Tuesday night or Wednesday for those out in Asia. And Bank of Canada meeting. I'm not getting terribly exercised about that, nor the ECB meeting, but we'll take a look at those as, of course, they roll into view later this week. For now, helmets on. Let's all be careful out there. Let's see how the situation shapes up. And we'll be back tomorrow with Saxo Market Call. Thanks for joining.